They offered sacrifices, and call it a coincidence of history if you want. The plague in Athens was stayed, which is why the monument to the unknown God was built there. Paul seized upon this tracing in the background of the idolatry at Athens, that they did recognize there was an unknown God. And that unknown God was the one, as with the Abraham factor, he moved in with a special revelation to tell them who it is Jesus. Now, the thesis of this book, Eternity in Their Hearts, is that in every culture of the world, there are those tracings that predate the corruption of Satan and the corruption of idolatry, which Paul talks about. Paul says they knew in their hearts, and they had a revelation in the creation, but they willingly begin to worship the creation, the creature, instead of the Creator. So prior to that corruption, God, which is why Paul says God's just and all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, because in the tracings of every culture is a revelation of the true God, given different names, as was the case when Abram confronted Melchizedek. And that doesn't change a quarter turn. The Melchizedek might have been the revelator himself, as some believe, though I hold to the view he was the king of Salem, and he had this impress of knowledge, and there were plenty of them around. God picked Abram. Shem was still around. God picked Abram to be the custodian through his descendants of special revelation. But the general revelation preceded the corruption of Nimrod, and I'm going to read you a few of them, but come on up, Chris, I want you to sing Peace in the Valley. Can I read you a little more tonight before we go home? Now, I got to preach in the morning, so it ain't going to go till 2 o'clock. You can rest assured. I'm just going to read a couple to you. And I'm not selling this book. I just think I'll probably get it sold out in plenty of places because it ought to be read. Paul says, when he writes in his epistle, even one of your own philosophers said, when he's arguing on the resurrection, he doesn't name him. He just quotes him. And you musicians can find your place again, because I'm going to read a little while to you. Epimenides was the Greek philosopher, or the Cretan philosopher, that came and by sacrifices to the unknown God. You may not want to believe that prior to the revelation of Christ, an appeal by Epimenides in the midst of a heathen culture and a proclamation that there was a God that they didn't know and that he had the power to direct sheep in luscious grass that were hungry early in the morning to lay down instead of feed. You may not want to believe that that God was willing to listen to someone call on him not in Jesus' name, particularly if you're a dispensationalist, you won't believe that at all. But the facts of history are, he sent the sheep out, and they did lay down, and they built altars, and they offered sacrifices, and the plague was stayed. Now, he either came at the right time, or the devil did it, or God did it. Now, the point I'm making is, Enoch walked and talked with God for years. There were sons, wife, and sons' wives after the flood. Canaan was cursed. And we know what his descendants through Nimrod and his evil wife Semiramis did. We know that eventually Shem, I believe, Josephus supports it, killed Nimrod. We know that Abram is a descendant of Shem through Eber. We know that Abram was chosen and became, through his descendants, the custodian of the special revelation until God, who talked in types and shadows and revealed himself in the creation, literally stepped on the stage of history. Did Satan absolutely wipe out the knowledge of God in the earth apart from... Now, I've been spending plenty of time showing you the influence of Satan. I don't ever want to underestimate him. But I don't like to overestimate him either. Greater is he that is in us than he that's in the world. Satan didn't totally wipe it out. Shem did kill Nimrod. And I'm telling you that without the help of a false prophet, namely the church that ought to be worshiping its master, going corrupt, Satan couldn't win. And we had the Dark Ages because the church failed to search for the Melchizedek point of contact in a lost world and fill the details into their hazy picture, but instead joined hands with the product of the Sodom factor and made an unholy marriage to the prostitution of the revelation of God. That's why I say I walk this tightrope throughout all my debunking of the traditions. I've not recommended you read the books who then go so far that they become fanatical and narrow-minded and myopic in failing to recognize the hand of God throughout the universe. I'm a Paulinist. Paul didn't hesitate to quote that Cretan philosopher in his arguments on the resurrection and in his arguments on other matters. Paul had some sense. I'm also crusading against these people that think you got to cut the top of your head off to be Christian. Took some intelligent people to carry the church and sail it through the shoals of silliness. Now, this Melchizedek factor was not only found and given as an opportunity and seized upon by Paul in the Monument to the Unknown God. Let me read you this one. 1867, a bearded Norwegian missionary named Lars Skrefsrud and his Danish colleague, a layman named Hans Borisson, found 2.5 million people called the Santal living in a region north of Calcutta, India. This Danish missionary soon proved himself an amazing linguist. He quickly became so fluent in Santal that people came from miles around just to hear a foreigner speak their language so well. As soon as possible, Skrefsrud began proclaiming the gospel to the Santal. He wondered how many years it would take before the Santal people, until then so far removed from Jewish or Christian influences, would even show interest in the gospel, let alone open their hearts to it. To Skrefrud's utter amazement, the Santal were electrified almost at once by the gospel message. By the way, I don't want to tell you why I'm going to China yet. This is some of it. At length he heard Santal sages, including one named Koleon, exclaiming, quote, "What this stranger is saying proves that Thakur Jew has not forgotten us after all this time." Skrefsrud caught his breath in astonishment. Thakur was a Santal word meaning genuine, and Jew meant God. Literally, they were saying the genuine God has not forgotten us after all this time. Clearly, Skrefsrud was not introducing a new concept but talking about one supreme God. I'm sure Skrefsrud is turning over in his grave at my pronunciation of his name. I'd rather call him his first name, Lars. Santal sages politely brushed aside the terminology he had been using for God and insisted that Thakur Jew was the right name to use. That name obviously had been on Santal lips for a very long time. I still remember teaching in Buenos Aires and having a Canadian Pentecostal missionary interpret for me. That kind of missionary that likes to talk down to inferior people. The idea that came out of the great duty of the whites to go out and upgrade these cultures that hadn't evolved yet. And that he threw up his hands in the middle of my teaching on the tabernacle and says, they're not able to understand this. And the students, almost to a mass, rode to their feet and says, yes, yes, in their own language they were understanding. How do you know about Thakur Jiyu? Scrafrud asked, a little disappointed perhaps. Quote, our forefathers knew him long ago, the Santal replied. Well, I have a second question, the missionary said. Since you knew about Thakur Jiyu, why don't you worship him instead of the sun, or worse yet, demons? Their faces changed. That, they responded, is the bad news. Then the sage named Kolian stepped forward and said, let me tell you our story from the beginning. The entire gathering, including the younger Santal, fell silent as Kolian, an esteemed elder of their group, spun out a story that stirred the dust on the eons of Santal history. Quote, long, long ago, according to Kolian, their sage, Thakur Jiyu, the genuine God, created the first man, Haram, and the first woman, Aio, and placed them far to the west of India in a region called Hihirai, Pipirai. A being named Lita tempted them to make rice beer. Then he enticed them to pour part of the beer on the ground as an offering to Satan. Haram and Aio became drunk on the rest of the beer and slept. When they awoke, they knew they were naked and felt ashamed. The missionary marveled at the biblical parallel in Kolian's story, but there was more. Aio later bore Haram, 7 sons and 7 daughters who married and founded 7 clans. The clans migrated to a region called Krojkaman, where they became corrupted. Now, I repeat, Melchizedek is unique. The one with the special revelation did him homage. Hebrews elevates him to the highest line of the priesthood and says Jesus is of that line. Nobody's going to settle it for sure. It could just as easily have been one of those Christophanies or pre-incarnate revelations of Christ on the stage of history. Or it could have been Shem or one of those patriarchs. Or it could have been someone taught by them. His appeared to be a pure faith, pure understanding of God, and the name of God he used was accepted by Abram as okay. Any one of those interpretations will do. The principle that is being uttered here is that in every culture, there is behind their idolatry a viewpoint of an original God whose name, though they're legends, not being the oracle chosen by God to tell the true story, in the telling of time takes on color that is different. The original God view was right. These clans migrated to a region called Krojkaman, where they became corrupted. Thakur Jiyu called mankind to return to him. When man refused, Thakur Jiyu hid a holy pair in a cave on Mount Harata. That close to Ararat or not? Harata. Then Thakur Jiyu destroyed the rest of mankind with a flood. Later, descendants of the holy pair multiplied and migrated to a plain called Sasan Bida, where Thakur Jiyu divided them into many different peoples. A branch of mankind which we should call Proto-Santal migrated first to Jarpi land and then continued eastward from forest to forest until high mountains blocked their way. Desperately, they sought a way through the mountains, but every route proved impossible, at least to their women and children. They became faint on their journey. In those days, Kolian, their sage, explained, the Proto-Santal as descendants of the holy pair still acknowledged Thakur Jiyu as the genuine God. Facing this crisis, however, they lost their faith in him and took their first step into Spiritism. The spirits of these great mountains have blocked our way, they decided. Come, let us bind ourselves to them with an oath, so that they will let us pass. You say, that's awful. They'd turn their back on God. His chosen people did it in the wilderness and wanted to go back to Egypt. The only difference was God had covenanted with Abraham, and for his own word's sake, he was going to continue. Even if he had to, at one occasion, tempted to start over with Moses, he would fulfill the promise of Abram, and these would be the people through whom he would reveal and keep pure the revelation of his nature. But those outside that covenant stream, they said, the spirit of these great mountains have blocked our way. Come, let us bind ourselves to them by an oath, so that they will let us pass. Then they covenanted with the Maranburu, spirits of the great mountains, saying, O Maranburu, if you release the pathways for us, we will practice spirit appeasement when we reach the other side. The missionary had thought it strange up to that time that the Santal name for wicked spirits meant literally, quote, spirits of the great mountains, especially since there were no great mountains in the present Santal homeland. Now he understood. Because this seer Kolion went on saying, after they made this covenant with the spirit of the mountains, very shortly, Kolion continued, they came upon a passage, the Khyber Pass, no doubt, in the direction of the rising sun. They named that passage Ba'in, which means day gate. Thus the pro-Santal burst through onto the plains of what is now called India. Subsequent migrations brought them still further east to the border regions between India and Bangladesh, where they became the modern Santal people. Kolion then explained that his people, since the time they passed through the day gate, felt obligated to fulfill their forefathers' ancient oath to the Maranburu, spirit of the great mountains, is its meaning. And still, even though the Santal no longer live within sight of those lofty mountains, their name for evil spirits remains Maranburu, the spirits of the great mountains. Under bondage to that oath, and not out of love for the Maranburu, the Santal begin to practice spirit appeasement, sorcery, and even sun worship. Kolion added, in the beginning we did not have gods. The ancient ancestors obeyed Thakur Jiu only. After finding other gods, day by day we forgot Thakur more and more until only his name remained. In this present age, it is said by some, Kolion continued, that the sun god is Thakur. Therefore, when there are religious ceremonies, some people look up to the sun and speak unto Thakur. But the forefathers taught us that Thakur is distinct. He is not to be seen with fleshly eyes, but he sees all. He has created all things. He has set everything in its place, and he nourishes all, small and great. How did Skrefsrud respond? Some missionaries, to be sure, responded in similar situations by saying, forget this being you think is God. He can only be the devil. I'll tell you who the true God is. And he would have made the mistake to not distinguish between the Melchizedek revelation and the Sodom view. To not distinguish between Thakur Jiu that predated Maranburu. Maranburu was the Satan worship caricature substitute in a breakdown of faith without the special revelation. This missionary was not of that breed. He knew that Abraham freely accepted Melchizedek's Canaanite name for God. He reflected that Paul, Barnabas, John, and their successors followed a path blazed by Greek philosophers when they accepted the Greek names Logos and Theos instead of Zeus as valid names for the Almighty. So he could safely follow the lead of Kolion and the Santal forefathers and accept Thakur Jiu as Yahweh's name among the Santal. He found no disqualifying barnacles of error attached to the name Thakur Jiu. It wasn't in the Zeus category worthy of rejection, but in the Theos category worthy of acceptance. Zeus rejected because created by Cronus. Furthermore, he began to preach, and he said he felt strange to hear his own lips proclaiming Jesus Christ, whom no general knowledge gave. Jesus Christ was the special revelation. He felt it strange to hear his own lips proclaiming Jesus Christ as the son of Thakur Jiyu, but only for a couple of weeks. After that, the strangeness wore off. No doubt it sounded just as strange the first time. Somebody said that Jesus Christ was the son of Theos, or for that matter, of God, which is not, by the way, a Greek word. Let me give you another one. And to make the long story short, thousands were won to the kingdom by a return to the original worship of Thakur Jiyu. Deep in the hill country of south central Ethiopia lived several million coffee growing people who, though divided into quite different tribes, share common belief in a benevolent being called Magano, omnipotent creator of all that is. One of these tribes is called the Darasa. Few of the tribe's 500,000 members actually prayed to Magano. Very few of them. In fact, a casual observer would have found the people far more concerned to appease an evil being they called Shaitan. You find that close to anything? A casual observer would have found the people far more concerned to appease... My eyes are working better tonight. An evil being they called Shaitan. One day, Albert Brandt asked a group of these tribesmen, "How is it that you regard Magano with profound awe, yet sacrifice to Shaitan?" He received the following reply: "We sacrifice to Shaitan not because we love him." You listening to me? "Not because we love him, but because we simply do not enjoy close enough ties with Magano to allow us to be done with Shaitan." At least one of the tribesmen, however, did pursue a personal response from Magano. His name, Warasa Wangi. His status, related to the tribe's royal family. His domicile, a town called Dilla, located on an extreme edge of the tribal land. His method of approach to Magano, a simple prayer asking Magano to reveal himself to his people. Warasa Wangi got speedy response. He prayed to Magano. Now, Magano they regarded with awe, but they offered sacrifices to Shaitan. He prayed to Magano. Startling visions took his brain by storm. He saw two white-skinned strangers in a vision. And he saw those two whites erect flimsy structures or shelters for themselves under the shade of a large sycamore tree near Dilla, Warasa's hometown. Later, they built more permanent shiny roof structures. Eventually, those structures dotted an entire hillside. Never had the dreamer seen anything even faintly resembling either the flimsy temporary structures or the shiny roof permanent ones. All dwellings in the Darasa land were grass-roofed. Then Warasa heard a voice. "These men," it said, "will bring you a message from Magano, the god you seek. Wait for them." Now, you that know the story of the Incas and the Aztecs, you know why. That they were such a setup for those Spaniards who came, because one of their earlier kings, getting sick of the sun worship, intelligent enough to decide it just couldn't be God, as he watched the precision with which the sun came up, the way it was bound to its pattern, as a king, he concluded that they were worshiping a God that he could conceive was not what he ought to be. He then likewise began to seek and change. And he ran into conflicts with the priest. It's in this story's in here also. And an experience was had with a white-robed person that's part of the legends of all of those ancient stories in South America, who came and instructed him and then left and said he would come again. Now, if you believe Melchizedek, those that hold that view, was a visitation by Christ, a Christophany. Maybe Christ appeared there. On the other hand, this could have been a teacher like Warasaw, and the distorted legends made them expect a white man to come, which made them easy victims to the Spaniards. Here's a pure form in this Ethiopian tribe. He heard a voice. He said, "These men will bring you a message from Magano. The God you seek, Magano, they'll bring you a message from him. Wait for them." Now, he was praying to Magano, and he had this vision. He saw two white men, and he saw them build a structure that later became a shiny roof structure under a sycamore tree near his home. And he heard a voice that said, "These men will bring you a message from Magano, the God you seek." Hazy view. Just seeking. No revelation. Except these men will bring you a message from Magano that you seek. Wait for them. In the final scene of his vision, Warasaw saw himself remove the center pole from his own house. In Darasa symbolism, the center pole of a man's house stands for his very life in their symbolism. So in his vision, he took his own life, the center pole of his own house, and he carried that center pole out of the town, set it in the ground next to one of the shiny roof dwellings of these strange men. Warasa understood the implication of his vision. His life must later stand in identification with those strange men, their message, and with Magano, who would send them. Now, there are some people that commit all heathen to hell. They're so self-righteous and so judgmental and so knowledgeable, they know everything. Paul didn't. I'm a Paulinus. He said they, by whatever standard they got, their performance is falling short to the glory of God. So all of sin comes short of the glory of God. And if God's going to judge by that standard, by their works, all are condemned. However, he leaves them in the hand of God, who is without respect to person, who is fair, who is just, who will judge him by the knowledge they have. And he does what humility would do. Lets God deal with his people and doesn't negate his own responsibility to take the commissions laid on him, to take the special revelation and fill in the details wherever the light in men's heart opens them in the sovereignty of God to the message. In the final scene of his vision, Warasa saw himself move that center pole. He understood the implication. His life must later stand in identification with those strange men, their message, and with Magano, who would send them. Warasa waited. 8 years passed. During those 8 years, several other soothsayers among the people prophesied that strangers would soon arrive with a message from Magano. Then one very hot day in December 1948, blue-eyed Canadian Albert Brandt and his colleague Glenn Kane lurched over the horizon in a battered old international truck. Their mission, to begin missionary work for the glory of God among these people. They had hoped to gain permission from the Ethiopian officials to locate their new mission at the very center of the region. But Ethiopians friendly to the mission advised that such a request would meet certain refusal due to the current political climate. Ask only to go as far as this town called Dilla. Warasa happened to live at Dilla. The advisor said with a wink, It's quite distant from the center of the tribe. Those opposed to your mission will think you couldn't possibly influence the entire tribe from such a peripheral town. There it is, Brandt said to Kane. It's only the very edge of the population, but it'll have to do. With a sigh, he turned the old international toward Dilla. Glenn Kane wiped sweat from his brow. "This is a hot one, Albert," he said. "I hope we can find a shady spot for our tents." "Look at that old sycamore tree," Albert responded. "Just what the doctor ordered." brant ray of the international up arise toward the sycamore. In the distance, Warasawangi heard the sound. He turned just in time to see Brant's old truck pull to a stop under the sycamore's speeding branches. Slowly, Warasa headed toward the truck, wondering. 30 years later, Warasa, now a radiant believer in Jesus Christ, the son of Magano, together with Albert Brant and others, counted more than 200 churches among the tribesmen of his people. Churches average more than 200 members each. With the help of Warasa and other inhabitants of Dilla, almost the entire tribe had been influenced by the gospel in spite of Dilla's peripheral location. 200 times 200 comes out to about 40,000 or more. It's a lot of people, I can tell you, whatever it comes to. Now, that's two popular renditions of a book I think you ought to read before we get into the Genesis accounts, you that really want to get serious. You say, those sound almost too good to be true. You know why the Protestants are having the revival in Korea and not the Catholics? Old Adoniram Judson and the wise ones, who didn't have a convert, by the way, for 7 years, to use statistical counters, had the same experience there with the name for God that was the unknown one that predated all their heathen worship. And that was the one he used in his translation. And revival broke out in the mountain tribes among the Karen and spread upward into Korea because of those that had known of a God that would come in an experience similar to this Ethiopian situation. The Catholics came, quick to make converts, did what they did at Rome, and in their translation, picked the lesser panoply of God names for their translation. Just recently, in an attempt to meet the ever-expanding Protestant revival, they met in council and changed the name that they had earlier picked for God, which was identified with one of the lower Sodomic versions, and adopted the one that is worshipped in the Protestant Bible as a means of trying to catch up with the Protestants who identified with the Melchizedek factor, the placed in the heart of man in the ancient cultures, the general revelation of a God that did not evolve in concepts, but was there from the beginning. I think the book's worth reading, and I think you ought to read it. And I add to what Ken Conley had to say about it, you ought to have it in your library. Now go buy it somewhere. It's Eternity in Their Hearts. Logos bookstores have it. Most Christian bookstores have it. Eternity in Their Hearts by Don Richardson.